Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, October the 10th, 2009. It's 11 o'clock in the morning on a wonderful Saturday. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today, and our guest is Tina Turbin. We're waiting for her to dial into the show. Tina is the author of the books Danny the Dragon, which is a children's book series, and Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebook. Tina is also a researcher and a licensed decorator. She's a wife and a mother to three beautiful children, and her books have been praised by artists and organizations like Judy Bloom, who is a world-renowned children's book author, Susan Gilbert, and USA Book News. Still waiting for Tina to dial in. She is on the West Coast, so waiting for her. While I'm waiting for her to dial in, one thing I've learned over the years, I do not let whatever happens, either with a guest or any event, stop me from moving forward. And I encourage you to do the same. If you ever do radio, television, or anything in your life, things will come up. And Tina seems like she just joined us. But keep moving forward. Always keep moving forward. Don't let anything stop you. Hi, Tina.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. We're actually live on the air. I've already gone and introduced the show. We've been on for probably about 2 minutes. So I'm going to just launch into our questions. Already introduced you to our listeners here at Off the Shelf and let them know that you are the author of the books Danny the Dragon, which is a book series which we're going to discuss on today's show, and Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebooks, as well as a researcher, and other many things that you're involved in that we're going to discuss on the show. I'm so honored to have you with us here at Off the Shelf, Tina. So welcome.
Thank you. It's my honor.
I wanted to begin, and this is just a brief question on this before we go into your books, but how did you come to be chosen to be photographed with Bing Crosby when you were still an infant? Were your parents involved in Hollywood?
They weren't necessarily involved in Hollywood. I was in Hawaii. His family was in Hawaii. And at that time, Marianne Sears was known at the largest hotel in Oahu for teaching babies to swim before they could walk. I happened to be, my family had relocated in, or my mother and father had relocated in Oahu, and my mom was concerned, wanted me to swim because we had a pool in the backyard, and so there I was. I took to the water immediately. In fact, I learned how to swim in the ocean.
Wow, yes, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was very common over there. She used a method that was used in the Marines, teaching babies how to roll over on their back to conserve their energy.
All right. As we were starting the show and as I was waiting for you to dial in, I was telling our listeners one thing I've learned, and then I see that you've also learned when I was researching for the interview, is that no matter what happens in life, you should always have a backup plan and continue to move forward. I think that is such a wonderful thing to continue to do, and I see you have done that. And today here at Off the Shelf, just for our listeners to see, I've done that before. Keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. Sometimes we get caught up in different things that happen to us, and we let them stop us, but I encourage people to keep moving forward, which Tina Turbin is an expert at doing. You have an absolutely amazing life that, to me, is an inspiration for millions of women who follow a path that's similar to yours, and women from all different walks of life. I was really inspired as I researched for this interview. You set out on a path as a young woman, starting even when you just shared with us that you learned how to swim in the ocean, and I think that set you on a path, it seems. I want to spend a little time talking about how you were able to remain focused, Tina, become a published writer, a humanitarian, an instructor, while you married at just a very tender age of 21 years, then you became a mother to three children. I know women personally who become a mother and they put their dream aside or a gift what talent they have, and they never, ever pick it up again. So I find it fascinating that you didn't do that. So please share with us, tell us, how did you stay focused during that time in your life that had to have been absolutely hectically busy? How did you stay focused and keep moving forward then, Tina?
Well, it's interesting. As you stated, you did your homework. I have to really commend you. You really have done your homework, and I really like these questions. And I want to let you know, when my first child was born, I had no idea how much I was going to fall in love with being a mother.
Mm.
And up until that point, I can't say everything was about me, but I was pursuing goals personally as an artist, and I had already been working with an agent in the entertainment business from a little bit over the age of 16.
Wow.
Which is about the time I wrote my very first children's story.
Mm-hmm.
So I drew and I painted, and I was very involved in the arts and around it through my family. But looking down at that baby, I knew that life was going to be different for me, and I knew that I had a responsibility as a woman. And I loved being a mom, and I didn't put everything aside as far as my goals as an artist, but it wasn't every day that it was about me and my goals anymore. I had now eventually three children with their goals. And one thing that was very interesting is my children were very artistic. My two boys were born, and I knew you could see what they wanted to do, especially the first one. He would sit as a little boy and watch Barbara Streisand and pretend he had his little plastic guitar, you know. and he went on at 7 years old to be on TV, two TV series, and
okay.
It just was very interesting, and his voice was used. He toured doing Les Miserables at 9 years old.
Wow.
And so what I did do is I opened up a business, and I continued to nurture the area, that desire I had with the arts, not just personally, but to help others. So I had a business, Showbiz Kids, in California for many, many years. As the kids got older, helped them pursue their goals. And then it was my time. And I call it life after momhood.
Okay.
Because they grow up. They grow up. You mm-hmm. need to have a plan B. And there's too many women that don't have plan B. You have too many things that hit you around the time the kids get older. Too many things physically that are changing for
yes.
you personally, possibly.
Yes.
And you find that your life isn't so full and revolved around them. And if you don't fill it up with something that's meaningful to you, you'll have an empty life.
That is amazing. I'm glad you brought that point up, to go from being focused on your children. And I really like this, something that you did, Tina. You didn't put your own talent, your own gift completely to the side. Certainly you had to make changes because you had to be there for your children, but you didn't completely abandon it. And I see women do that, and then you devote
yeah.
themselves to their children, which is a wonderful thing. But then, like you said, after the children are grown and they go on to a life of their own, if you don't have anything else, you could have an empty life there. So I think that is a really remarkable thing that you did. And as we do this interview, I know I'm going to keep going back in my mind to the fact that you learned how to swim in the ocean. I think that speaks volumes for the way your life, the path your life went down. What type of entertainment business work did you do while your children were young? I know you said were you like a talent scout? What type of business did you run while your children were young?
Well, when I first started, I actually started doing consulting, and it's very interesting. Just recently, I don't know if you know the TV series Mad Men. It's quite popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
There is a girl who was just nominated, Alyssa Moss, and her mom had contacted me because I was interested in calling her mom, asking her. This is before she had the positions of roles that she does now, but she was a little girl like my
mm-hmm.
son. They were the same age. And I kept asking her questions, and I was kind of applying what she was telling me, and because I was very interested. I wanted to learn more. I had already worked in the entertainment business, but never from the position of I'm a mom with a son who's got talent, and people like his voice already, and he's charming, he's outgoing. I knew he had the qualities if he was
mm-hmm.
interested, and he was. So eventually she said, Tina, you should open up a consulting. You should do what I'm doing, because I'm getting too many calls now that my daughter's starting to work more.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. I started consulting, helping people, but eventually I opened up my own studio. So we had casting directors come in. We had agents come in. We had regular acting classes with Jean Dale. With Jean Garbett, dancing lessons, singing lessons. We had people coming in for workshops, and we had that in Burbank, right up from where the current studios are for Hollywood, for Disney right now.
Okay.
And we had that for many years, and then when I moved, decided to take a break when Jason was I wanted to. It's rough when I was running the business and also having to be on the set with him,
mm-hmm.
and having still two other children that I needed to care for their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to relocate. He had just done Les Mis. We decided to relocate, and I figured, you know, when he's going to be driving, he'll be able to drive himself to his own auditions. So we moved to Florida, and that's when I wrote the book, Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebook.
Oh.
And I started doing seminars over this way.
Okay. That's what I wanted to go into, launch into, and ask you next was, could you tell our listeners here a little bit about Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebook? What's it about and what inspired you? It sounds like it was your work working
yes.
with children that inspired you to write the book. Well, if you could tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. Well, the East Coast Guidebook is exactly what the title says. It is a guidebook. It's a step-by-step, very simple process that you go through, and it'll tell you what to do, but not just without knowing the information. You'll be explained a little bit, let's say, for about resumes on what it is and how it applies in this business and the various ways you can write it based off of what you're going for, because you might be going for print, which is billboards, box covers of cereal, magazines, that's print, versus an acting or theatrical, which would be your commercials or going on TV shows or movies. That's more theatrical, would be movie and TV shows, and commercial mm-hmm. is what you know commercial. So there's different resumes that are used, for example, and then you would read about that, and then the actual steps, a checklist. So the whole book is done like that. So the end result of going through this guidebook is you have the exact knowledge that you will need to be able to run your daughter's career throughout this business on the East Coast. And at the same time, I think you'll have enough, actually from what's come in from the readers, is they feel that they have enough information that if they wanted to start their own little business helping other moms, they could too. So it was my way to not be bombarded with the phone calls when I moved here
mm-hmm.
by the people asking me. I was kind of like the big fish in the little sea, because I had experience and people didn't have the experience here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting a lot of calls and it was interrupting me. So it was a way in which I could compile this information, and when somebody called me, I could say, you know, there's a book now.
Wow.
You can do that. And I also, and I launched it with doing workshops around, so I actually sort of piloted it first, and that was successful.
Oh.
And I knew the book was ready. I would do weekend pilots.
Are the East Coast and the West Coast, is it that different, though? Getting into
yes.
the it is that different.
Yes, very, very different. It is very different. And I have toyed around with the idea of writing one for the West Coast, and if I do, I am going to do it with two other women, that one woman who is a manager right now and then another woman who is an agent. And the reason I'd like to do it collaborating with two other women is I really would. It's a lot of work to write a book, for
mm-hmm.
one thing, and I would like their input. I would like to do that, you know.
Okay.
I would like their input.
Yeah, that would.
And
be-
it is vastly different. Just to, so there's no mystery here for your listeners nor for you. The way the unions run are a little bit different. It's a right to work state. Let's say, for example, in Florida, so you can have multiple agents here. Where in California it's a little bit different.
Okay. That's interesting. I knew of a lady who, she's a college student now, but who acted on, I think it was Punky Brewster, and she said she still has most of the money she made from that show, but she's doing well. She's in college now and might even have graduated. She interned at a company that I worked with. I want to talk a little bit. There's so many things I want to discuss with you, but next I want to talk about your latest book, Danny the Dragon Meets Jimmy. What challenges do Danny and his friend Skipper encounter as this story unfolds?
Well, the story, what challenges they're going to be running into that's going to be kind of more going through in the series. Every book isn't necessarily going to be their challenge,
mm-hmm.
but how they help others going through any obstacles, which might be, it's a children's picture book. So a child, for me, at the age that this book is addressing, or that's their audience, I don't have the bad guys and the good guys. That's
okay.
not my style of writing. But the bad guys for a child at that age are just things they run into in life that they don't really realize they're running into. But life poses them situations in which a child then has to make their decisions. And you never know what's going on in a little child's head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You never know if they're going to decide, oh, I don't like fish. Or,
right.
Or like, oh, my gosh, going to the beach is scary because they see somebody arguing, for example,
right.
you know?
Okay.
So my books are very subtle, and Danny and Skipper are actually going through and they're observing things and presenting solutions in which, as the reader, will be guided towards more logical and healthier decisions.
Okay.
That's the best way I can say.
Yeah, and then
the
you can
say it.
I like that it's a series book, so readers, parents, and children can follow along to see what happens to Danny and his friends that are in these different series of the book. Then you can just keep following along with the characters.
Exactly, and each book is its own story. The very, very first book leads an the ending leads you to some questions and curious, and based off the reviews, wanting more. Everybody wants more. They want to know, where is Danny from? How did they get here?
Okay.
Where have they been? What are they going to do? What are their adventures going to be?
That is wonderful. At your website, for our listeners, Tina's website is www.tinaturbin, and that's spelled TinaTurbin.com, so www.tinaturbin.com. At your website, Tina, you state that you couldn't get the idea for the book, Danny the Dragon, out of your head. And I quote, you said, "The story evolved when you slept, you drove, you looked at a child, walked by a child, or even looked at the sky. It was developing beyond my control," you said. And I love the anticipation of creating the book in this series. Why do you think you were so driven or guided to sit down and pen Danny the Dragon?
I think once I sat down with my kids and I said to them, you know what, it's my turn. I'm ready, you know. I'm bursting with, I've got to do something now that I've been wanting to do. And when they all said to me, "It's your turn, Mom. We're going to back you up no matter what," you know.
Wow.
I had already, I've been, about the last, I'd say, 10 years of all of them being at home, I got licensed as a designer. I had gone back to college and done more painting and drawing. I was doing, getting more into the fine arts down here in the St. Petersburg area. And I knew that I had been decorating homes and designing my own furniture, but it wasn't really the area I wanted. I wanted to be back out there as an author. I wanted to start writing, and I wanted to reach out with my writing with some of the causes and purposes that I have. And so I think once I got the okay from them, I let my husband know. He was like, "I am behind you." I just had such backup from my own family that I had given so much to. And I had this strength in that conversation, you know, with them. I just felt so satisfied that at that point it was like, okay, anything that I had been holding back on just flooded. And it hasn't stopped, Denise.
Wow.
It just hasn't stopped. I just go through life, and I'm excited to wake up in the morning.
Oh, that is phenomenal. I wanted to ask you, do you still do the interior design? And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the cooking and whatnot that you do and some of the recipes that you have. But do you also still do interior designing? You seem to have juggling quite a few things.
You know, I am a licensed decorator in Florida, and I bought this big, beautiful home, and I learned that through – I like to read, and I had done my research, and that's another thing, I'm a researcher. So I had researched, you know, well, I didn't like some of the furniture I was exposed to in Florida. I was used to having choices, so I would say, you know, well, I really like this couch, but I don't want this fabric, and I don't want the arms this way, and I don't want the back this way, and I want different pillows, and I want this and that. And I mean, people would look at me cross-eyed, you know, like, you know, where are you from here? So I really realized that I could design my own, and how do I do that? And that's where I researched, and I got myself licensed as a decorator and started doing it personally for my own home in this new home. And then I started learning about pulling permits, and I just started going into homes and doing that. And I, you know, I took on a few jobs to help other people, and I now donate. To just really answer your question, no, I'm not doing it for work. I do it for myself. Like any home I'd get into, I'd do that. But I'm going to tell you, it's a lot of work. It is a lot of work, and it's more time consuming, and I don't want to do it the way I was doing it, because what I'm doing now is really more dear to my heart. It was fun.
Okay, we are, just to let our listeners know who might have just joined us, we're interviewing a fabulous, phenomenal woman, Tina Turbin. She's the author of the books Danny the Dragon, which is a children's book series, and Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebook, which she spoke about earlier, which is a wonderful guidebook for parents and children who are interested in getting involved in the entertainment business for the East Coast. And I want to talk to, and I want to encourage our listeners to go to Tina's website. She has a wonderful website, one of the best that I have seen. Her website is www.tinaturbin, and that's spelled TinaTurbin.com. TinaTurbin.com. I encourage you to go there and explore her website. There is so much there. I know you also have a blog and a live journal for Danny the Dragon, which tickled me when I saw it. I said, oh, my goodness, she is really bringing Danny the Dragon to life. In all my years of interviewing authors, even best-selling authors, I don't think I've ever seen a character blog and a live online journal. So could you tell us about the blog and the journal, the concept for the book, Tina, and have you found those tools, how they helped you to connect more deeply with the book's current and potential readers?
Well, the Danny the Dragon, the blog itself has enabled me to, it enables me to reach down in there and continue to write, not necessarily writing another book, but to kind of connect into areas. And I get a lot of questions that are, you can go to my contact page on my Danny the Dragon site and on my Tina Turbin site, and I personally spend time to personally respond to all of them. And I get questions sometimes about literacy, and I get questions about young children, and so it's a way for me to just kind of connect in, and it just keeps things flowing. So that's what I enjoy. It's just something I enjoy. It's part of writing, part of being an author.
Yeah,
so any of it is wonderful. And one thing that we just added this week is it's not games or contests, but I'm giving giveaways every month. So I'm very interested in other women. I admire how you're asking me these questions, but as I'm talking to you, when we're done, I want to find out even more about you. You know, I've looked up a lot about you too.
Okay.
But one thing that I'm doing on the Tina Turbin site is I'm having people, because I'm interested in finding out more about other people. So on the Tina Turbin site, I have women now writing in, and they can write about another woman who's inspired them, or somebody who's doing something fantastic, whatever they're involved in. And so once a month I'm going to be going and taking one or more of those write-ups or articles, and I'm going to feature another woman and some of the amazing things that women are doing out there. And then on the Danny the Dragon, we have a couple other. We have family games as well as children's games, because I want to keep the kids inspired to be creative themselves.
Wow, you know, I don't know why this just popped in my head, but I thought Sesame Street, that maybe your Danny the Dragon could be going in a direction like that if it continues to evolve. But
Would you like to hear something very interesting?
Certainly.
Well, on October 30th, we have a couple of the Sesame Street characters are going to be on stage in Pasadena, California. Actually, it's as of right now, she might have changed it. The Pasadena conductor for the Pasadena Orchestra contacted us because I have a CD with songs along with the reading of my book. And my son composed a classical song called Danny the Dragon as a theme song for me as a gift about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
When he's a songwriter, so and a composer. So she heard the song, and we have a she has a big concert that she does every October 30th, and she's doing a feature of the song, and Count Dracula and some of the other Sesame Street characters are going to be involved in the character and reading, and Count is actually going to be reading my book aloud to the
oh
audience.
Oh, my goodness, congratulations.
Yes, so there's going to be 2,000 wonder, and that's the release of my CD.
Oh, that is fantastic.
That
when
yeah.
is that going to be again so our listeners can tune in? When is that? Or do
that's
you not
going to
have...
be October 30th in okay. Pasadena. It's going to be at the Pasadena City College. It's in, I forget what hall. You can go to Tina Turbin or Tina Turbin or DannyTheDragon.com. And it will be October 30th. It's at 8 o'clock in Pasadena, California, at the City College there.
Oh.
It houses 2,000. It's her largest concert every year, actually, because it's a family concert. Anybody who's any of the kids who are wearing costumes get an entrance free. And I am supported by Pamela's Products, which is a gluten-free company, and we're doing giveaways. So we have gift giveaways for every attendee.
Wow, that is, oh, my goodness, that's October the 30th for our listeners here at Off the Shelf at 8 o'clock at Pasadena City College, Danny the Dragon with Sesame Street. Oh, you guys in the area, I encourage you to go out and visit and enjoy, and you can find out more information at Tina's website, again, www.tinaturbin.com. Who did the artwork and the illustrations for the book? Just at the website, I was just, it's, it can almost make you just start laughing out loud. The artwork is so, it just brings the spirit, I guess, of the character to life. Who did the artwork and the illustrations for the book, Tina?
Her name is Aisha Jasuna, and we have a lovely uniting story, I call it. I searched and searched. As an author, very often you lose your rights to your illustration concepts. That's very often you're packaged with your publisher in a way that you write your book, you're the author, it's out of your hands, they have a vision. Imagination Publishing Group allowed me the creative control that I wanted to maintain throughout my series. And I searched and searched, and we talked about it, and finally Aisha was one illustrator who was willing to work with me, but we had a major obstacle. We had two major obstacles. One is she lives in Latvia, which is in Europe.
Mm.
And two is she speaks no English.
Wow. Oh, boy.
So she had to have my book interpreted. And we had a lady named Evita who interpreted the book. And she lives in Latvia, speaks very good English. So
mm-hmm.
all of my notes and descriptions, I had descriptions of all of my characters, down to the red shoes, the backpack, the shape of the face, what I had envisioned. Not only did I have this urge to create a book, I knew what my characters looked like. I knew that Jimmy was a little auburn-haired colored boy, and you know, I knew mm-hmm. the age range and the shaped face. And we went back and forth for, I would say, close to 3 months total just on developing all the characters, which is unheard
wow.
of.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's a very unusual story. I didn't hear from her for about 2 months.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, I couldn't get answers. And then she just gently passed me an email one day, and she said, Tina, as an illustrator, we've made great strides. And we now have our concepts down, and we're in harmony on this.
Mm-hmm.
But now, before I can just sit down and write 32 pages of your children's picture book, you need to let me feel what I need to feel, and when I'm ready to do it, it's going to flow out of me. And
okay.
she said, until then, I'm waiting. So it was about 2 weeks later, and she emailed me. She said, it's happening. And then I just started getting picture after picture after picture.
Oh, my goodness.
She's an award-winning illustrator.
Oh, my
award-winning.
Goodness.
So I'm honored to be working with her. And
yes.
We have never met, and we intend to meet in 2010.
Wow. Oh, she is a true artist. She's waiting
yes.
for it to come. That is amazing. I was going to ask you how you found your illustrator. I have another friend who is a children's book writer, and it's almost like she stumbled upon the illustrator, who had just a wonderful relationship. But some illustrators, they don't see what the author sees So that can be a struggle. They see the story depicted one way as far as pictures and illustrations go, and the author sees it another way, but that the two of you were able to come to agreement with it just coming through her naturally is truly remarkable. And I was going through your website and doing the research, I'm thinking, what is this about Danny the Dragon's cookbook? What ages would a cookbook be targeted for, and what are some of the benefits that the cookbook's audience will gain when they get a copy of it? You just taking Danny. He's just going. Danny's really expanding.
Yeah, Danny's expanding because Tina, his author, is very interested in children's welfare as far as their nutrition and their literacy level. I'm a firm believer. You feed a child a healthy meal at breakfast. They go to school. They eat a healthy lunch, they continue on, and their physical body is not impinging on them, on their study, on their mentally, you know. You feed a child the donut, you hand them to school, their blood sugar sort of crashes. Before you know it, they're unruly in class, they're tired, they're being told they're not listening, they're diagnosed that they're not paying attention with attention deficit disorder, ADD, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very, very interested in not just nutrition for children, but children need to understand healthy eating.
Mm-hmm.
And one area that I'm very involved in is celiac and gluten-free. Celiac disease is an autoimmune disease. Hits close to one out of 100 people in the United States. It's very well known and very well educated in the schools for doctors in Europe, but it is mm-hmm. not in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only autoimmune disease which is not recognized and supported by our government for funding mm-hmm. for research. So Danny the Dragon is going to have once a month, I have cupcake baking parties wherever I'm traveling, and they're promoted and I'm supported. Like right now in Florida, I'm supported and sponsored actually by Pamela's Products and supported by Whole Foods on my cupcake videos.
Okay.
And the kids come and we teach them a little bit about gluten and celiac. Now, celiac disease is a disease that affects the lining, but the only solution to celiac disease is to abstain from a gluten-free diet. It's not there is no medication.
Mm.
So Danny has gone into, well, the CD that I told you about,
mm-hmm.
all the profits from the CD that's being released that evening. It is the first track is the reading of the book and then followed by 10 songs. All of the profits are going to Columbia University Celiac Disease Center for Dr. Peter Green.
Oh, thank you.
He diagnoses 2,400 people, close to 2,400 people a year who were not correctly diagnosed elsewhere.
Oh, thank you for doing that, Tina. So many people will be blessed through your work.
Yeah, Elizabeth Hasselhoff, she's on The View. She went number of years. She just recently wrote a book, and Peter Green helped her to finally get correctly diagnosed and find out what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
So I have many doctors and nutritionists that work with me and write for me on my gluten-free site. But Danny the Dragon, I mean, you know, he's gonna teach kids at whatever level. It's gonna be very age appropriate for, I would say, elementary schools, your middle school, elementary school, and even little guys will be able to.
Okay.
To deal with this book. Lots of pictures and simple explanations.
To keep the children's attention. Just for fun, Tina, what was your, I know you said you wrote your first book when you were 16 years old, but could you just share with us, just for fun, if you remember, what was your very first children's book about, and do you ever plan to publish it?
Well, it wasn't the first book. It was a first children's story.
Okay.
At 16. And do I ever plan to publish it? That's a good question. You're bringing something up that I've kind of put on the shelf. I could say that I'm not sure I will publish that one. I'm not sure I would. It's a great story because it's actually a true story.
Okay.
And it was very interesting because when I was 16, I was actually sending it out to various places, and nobody knew I was 16, and I kind of connected up with one company, and they started giving me some feedback, and they were interested in working with me. but I didn't get the support from my family to pursue that. So
oh, okay.
I sort of dropped it. But I think because I have other interests right now,
mm-hmm.
I might take somewhat of the concept of it, because it was a situation between my mother and myself that
okay.
was kind of hilarious to me. I might take something out of that experience and put it into the book.
Okay.
Something. I might do that.
All right.
If
all
so,
right.
I'll have to dedicate it to you for bringing it up. I'm serious.
And you are already that. I think using writing to deal with life experiences, writing is a marvelous tool to deal with writing. I mean, real life experiences, to get it out of your system, to work your way through it. I think writing is a good tool. So too is music. Is also a good tool to do that.
Oh, are you involved in music?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
No,
I'm not. My youngest brother is, but I'm not.
Well, I feel music is an outlet. I mean, what a musician can do, what he feels, and he can put down and make these beautiful sounds all come together in harmony. And yet, when the listener listens to it, it takes them into another world. Whether
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, you can just really do that. I mean, when what they do with background music with the score on a movie is amazing, because the music makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you.
Tina, you're also a researcher, as you had said earlier, and I know your research work focuses on the family, women. As you alluded to earlier, you're going to feature a woman at one of your websites, children, children's health, and the environment and nutrition. And then you say that there is a lot of valid information in the public domain that you can get either on the internet or in print or through audio, but there's also a lot of information, and as a writer, I just wanted to touch on this briefly. There's also a lot of articles and things that are written across fields and industries that the public can consume, read, or take in. That's not really that much in-depth research. It's kind of, to me, I call it a little bit of lazy writing, where there's not enough fact-checking and not validating the information that's being presented to the public as a fact, which it may or may not be the case. But do you see this mentality amongst writers growing, especially with the Internet, a kind of a temptation not to really dig to the heart of what we're writing about, but to be a little lazy just to get the article out? Do you see this? Do you see this growing amongst writers?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think part of the reason has to do with people are getting more involved. I mean, let's say if you're an author, I think people are getting quite involved with the social media,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting involved, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is sort of, to me, different than social networking, but social networking is, you know, having your social sites and connecting up, but the social media has to do with getting out there and you write these articles.
Yes.
And if you're being guided by somebody who knows a lot about it, or if you've done your homework, you'll know that the search engines work a certain way. So the most important thing is just get content out there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, versus somebody who that is their life and it's their writing and it's their purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Then they are going to do a little bit more homework, because what they're going to put out there, they're going to hope that somebody's going to read it and it's going to inspire them or change their life or
mm-hmm.
get them to contemplate or get them to go do something, you know. But a lot of these articles, as you say, they're just put out there for a different purpose, which is just to increase the exposure to their websites or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or their name, whatever it can be. And that's the nature of what I think, you know, the computers –
Is there a way that you've seen, though, that readers, and a lot of people aren't aware of this, people who do put a lot of content, companies who have a lot of writers who write for them, you keep it a certain length and you do, you know, your keyword, search engine optimization with your keywords and whatnot, but is there a way that you've seen that people can tell, okay, this is really a legitimate, it's factually based? I always look for the credentials by the writer. If they wrote a story about nursing, have they been involved in nursing for like 20 years and they have their licenses? Those are the things I look for to see how valid it is. Just to let our listeners know, because there's so much information out here that people just believe it because it's in print, and you have to, as a reader, do a little more of the researching that other that the writer should have done, but perhaps maybe did not do.
Absolutely. I mean, that's definitely a valid way to find out if it's valid information. But still, if somebody says in their article, whether they have credentials or not, and they say X amount of percentage of children are graduating at this grade level, well, don't take that as a quote and repeat that.
Yeah.
Do your own homework and do a Google search for, you know, graduation statistics. You know, put in whatever keywords you can to try and find out if those are valid statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, you can even go even a step further and write to that person saying they were off the mark or well done, you know, for their work. Or you can write your own article saying this particular person quoted something as being untrue. You know, you can take it to whatever level it is, depending on what your purpose for doing that research is. But you're right. You know, people are writing about everything, and you do have to do your own homework to see what's out there.
And that's a topic I'm glad we did briefly discuss here at Off the Shelf, and it's something that I am going to make a point to discuss even on other shows, because there's so much information out here, and people just like watching television, people just automatically say, well, it was on the news, so it must be true.
Yeah.
To do a little bit more research. Did you create the Kids Misdiagnosed website? You have so much going on, and we only have a few more minutes left. I want to try to cover so much more. But did you create the Kids Misdiagnosed website? I really love that website, Tina. Did you create that?
Somebody else had suggested, and there's a group of professionals that have suggested to put together a site with having testimonies. And that actually got started by a group of people, and I've been asked to be contributing on that. And then it was put to the – I actually couldn't be involved in it due to so much happening, but evidently in March they were going to – I guess they're gathering all the content, and then it will be put out.
Okay. Well, what is the purpose? Could you just let our listeners know who haven't gone to the website? What is the purpose of the website?
Of the Kids Misdiagnosed?
Yes.
On the Kids Misdiagnosed, I think it's I think the slant was going to be it's going to be informative, informing parents and other doctors, nutritionists, to especially parents, if your child, like if you're on a path, which is something, this is why I was in agreement with being involved in it, if a child is on a path of no recovery or slow recovery, to really do your homework. And which goes back to what you're talking about. If a doctor tells you, you know, your daughter's two-year problems with skin rash is this, and you're using some sort of medication, do your homework on the medication. Do your homework on the rash, and also get other opinions. Too many people are not getting second or third opinions. And, I mean, the amount of women, this is heartbreaking, Denise. I have a PhD who's writing on my gluten-free site right now. She spent close to 10 years. She was almost at a level of living her dream with her. She had just graduated. She moved with her husband and her children to a new home, and she had a lump in her breast. She was told that she basically had cancer and that they were going to have to remove it. She was healthy. They opened her up. They took it out. They put her to sleep, and she woke up 35 days later. She had a virus that had spread in her body. It ended up being that the lump was not what they thought, and she had an autoimmune disease that had spread. It started off being she had celiac, but it had spread to being lupus, to other it had gone to other areas. But she is writing about this. She's actually writing in sections. She's writing in chapters every month for my website, Gluten Free, for other women. And the importance of getting another opinion and getting with a doctor you feel strong about, because if she had gone to get another opinion rather than 2 days later go in for the surgery, she wouldn't have had the 10 years of hell. And, you know, so that's where, I mean, I don't want to bring up something horrible, but that's, you know, these are the type of women that, that write to me, and things that happen with children too. Having a child be put on a medication because they didn't have the attention units they should have had in second grade,
mm-hmm.
which when you're in second grade, you better be a darn good teacher
yeah.
to keep those children's attention. You can't expect a second grader to sit there and listen to you for 30 minutes.
No. And
can't.
That is a very good point that you bring up. And they are, a lot of our children are being medicated just to be quiet in school, just to sit there and be quiet in school.
That's right.
I think that's what's driving a lot of it. A good point. I'm so glad the work and the, what you're donating from your CD. And I do want to talk about the CD before we close. We've got less than 15 minutes. The recipes at Glutton Free help, and I want to let our listeners know again here at Off the Shelf, Tina Turbin, she's just a phenomenal woman. She's an author. She's a researcher. She's an interior decorator, a mother, a wife. She's just a businesswoman. To our listeners, you can find her on the Internet at www.tinaturbin.com, and that's spelled TinaTurbin.com. And, of course, you'll be able to listen to the show today and for days and weeks to come to learn more about Tina. And I encourage you to visit her website. Back to the question on the recipes at Glutton Free Help. Did you create each of these recipes? I was looking through. Did you create each of these recipes yourself, Tina?
Most of them. And most of them, if they were not given to me, if there's somebody else, I give recognition to who that person is. There's many people who do write a gluten-free recipe or develop gluten-free recipes based off of another recipe, but you have to adapt it to a gluten-free recipe. And so let me explain to you. So gluten is the protein molecule in wheat and some other grains.
Okay.
That's the simplest without getting into the technical details
mm-hmm.
for you. Somebody who's more educated would go, uh-oh, Tina, you said it a little bit wrong, but for any
okay.
of those who really know what they're talking about, yes, I know I didn't say it exactly right, but that's all you need to know right
okay.
now and your listeners. It's the protein part of wheat, rye, barley, and other related grains.
Okay.
And some people cannot tolerate gluten. They either have the autoimmune disease or they have a reaction to it, like an allergy, which is different. But let's say you want to make lasagna, and you can't make lasagna with wheat noodles. So there's rice noodles you can buy, and so somebody might adapt and change the lasagna recipe to that. That's a simple explanation.
Okay.
But if you're going into breads, how do you make bread without wheat?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of grains, so that's where a lot of people will get into changing the recipe around. There's incredible recipes, books out there, incredible recipe books out there right
oh,
now.
Oh,
and
okay.
you can get a simple start on my website. There's recipes, but that's not what I feature in, but I have delicious recipes up there. Yes.
Yeah, I was checking them out. Definitely.
Yeah, they're yummy.
Have you thought about taking your recipes and the focus on healthy eating to the Food Network? Have you ever shopped that idea or thought about taking it to the Food Network?
this last group that you have to audition. You send in a video, and somebody had sent to me the auditioning procedure to get into this last group that they were looking at, and I read the agreements that if you do make it, what you have to agree to, and I'm unwilling to change my life for that. So I entertained the idea, looked into what the requirements would be should I ever achieve that status, and I'm not willing, I wasn't willing to do that over the next couple of years.
Okay.
It's not a long commitment because the Food Network basically tapes the year's shows over a very concentrated period of time, close to 2 months.
Okay.
But I'm not willing to do that right now because I have more. I guess that's not really my thing. I don't really consider myself. If anything, I wouldn't want to be really known, and I don't want to be known as somebody who cooks gluten free. And
okay.
I want to be known more as somebody who's really trying to increase the awareness of this disease and getting diagnosed properly. That's more my interest. And using my abilities as a children's author to reach out into schools and homes and parents to touch them and reach out to them and get their feedback on it too.
All right. And congratulations. I wanted to make sure I congratulated you on being a finalist in the Arizona Authors Association Literary Contest. So congratulations. And I also
want
to let
very much
our listeners know again, as we're coming down to the last 10 minutes of today's show, to please look for Tina Turbin's Danny the Dragon, her children's book, which I do want to talk about as we close, October the 30th at 8 o'clock at the Pasadena City College. And you can find more information about that upcoming event at the end of this month at Tina's website at www.tinaturbin.com. You will really enjoy the time you spend there at her website. You hear at the interview the different things we're talking about, and she's got other pages you can launch into from her main website. But you could spend a good amount of time there and truly enjoy yourself, you and your children, at her website. Tina, you're also a magazine writer. I wanted to ask you, what advice would you give to new writers, as some of our writers here are off the shelf or trying to break into the industry, some are established, but what advice would you give to people who want to become a published writer? How can they go about getting that first article published in a magazine, a newspaper, or at a website?
You know, well, getting it published in an article, those are different types of publications, but the very, very basic answer to that is quantity. It's just send it, quantity and your quality. Don't send it out to three publications, and don't get your heart set on one or two publications. Look at the big world, and there's many, many publications. Just send it out. Send it out and have your cover letter very precise. Follow the rules. And you can also call up. Each person might have, or each publication might have, their own requirements. Follow what their requirements are. Don't do what you think is the standard. In case there is, let's say you're trying to get into parenting magazine, find out if they have, find out what you need to do to get in there. But I say quantity. And if you're not getting, let's say you write an article and you send it out to 20 or 30 different publications, magazines, whatever, and you don't get any feedback, just take a look at your writing. Be willing to take a look to see if there's something you need to change a little bit by doing your research. Look at what they are accepting.
Okay.
And also make sure they are accepting. Don't waste your time. Make sure they are accepting. There's a lot of publications that I learned the hard way that you can submit and they don't want other writers.
Yeah, you can check the magazine. Sometimes the online they'll have writers' guides, and you can also check magazines like Writer's Digest, Poets and Writers, Literary Marketplace, and directories, and see who's accepting what now, and then target the magazines or newspapers. Newspapers I would recommend starting with a local newspaper, but target the areas that you want to write in, the subject matter that you want to write in, and then target those and submit your work. And thank you for sharing that, Tina. I wanted to ask you next, because sometimes people do get discouraged. You've accomplished so incredibly much. I mean, raised three beautiful children. You have a family, and you're going after your dreams. I wanted to ask you, and you're continuing to also reach out and help other people. Was there ever a time for those who might be listening who are discouraged? Was there ever a time in your life when you were discouraged, and if so, what did you do to encourage and motivate yourself to keep moving on?
Was there ever a period of time I was discouraged?
As a writer.
Oh, as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that narrowed it down better. <'Cause> I... Okay, so as far as being discouraged, yes, and I'm going to tell you, when you're writing, and you know how you were just discussing promoting and trying to get it out there, there is a lot of, as you could call them, hats that you have to wear as a writer, from writing to qual to promoting to following up to getting your illustrating to finding publishers, on and on. There's a lot, and you step out of being the artist slash author slash writer to the businesswoman again, when you're having to run that. And I've gotten to a point that I can get so tied up into the business end of all of this with public relations and marketing and the interviews and following up and the internet stuff that I can lose sight and lose time on getting back into the creative part.
Mm.
And that, my solution, and I do write about this because I've been asked, like, how do I manage my time? This, the best way that I, you definitely have to do that, and you either have to at that point elicit some help, hire some help, or work out an exchange with somebody else who wants to work for you and you help them publish their book or whatever.
Right.
Or you just have to say, okay, this is the time that I write, and it doesn't matter if I have a million other things I still have to wear on my business hat or role, but that's my creative time, or you're not going to be, you won't be getting out more materials.
Okay.
That is the part. I have hit a point that I looked at my husband and I said, this isn't fun. It hasn't been fun for weeks.
Okay.
Because all I'm doing is the business, and I'm not being able to really create my writing anymore and get back into the children's writing. And that's what I realized. You really have to manage.
And I think as an artist, you have to learn a way to balance both. I want to, before we close with only 4 minutes, and it went by so fast, there were so many questions I wanted to ask, and some I did not get to. But I wanted to close talking about Danny the Dragon again, which is your new book out. And I wish I was in California because I would go. Danny the Dragon is going to be appearing with Sesame Street on October the 30th, some of the characters from Sesame Street at 8 o'clock. Again, that's October the 30th at 8 at Pasadena City College. And you can find more about it at Tina's website, www.tinaturbin.com. We've only got 3 minutes left. So I wanted to ask you, Tina, who are some of your favorite writers and what is it about their work that you admire most?
Oh, boy. There's such a range. As a little girl, I loved E.B. White. I mean, I think I read Charlotte's Web over and over, and I think I loved the introduction to me that animals were alive and I could talk to them. I look at children with animals, and children don't look at animals really as anything other than another little person with fur, you know? I love that. As I got older, I think one very inspiring book to me, I read Papillon, which I read the English version of Papillon, which is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but Steve McQueen ended up doing the movie.
Yes.
Right. And to me, when I read that book, it's the author giving me concepts that I created my own visions or pictures of what those were, which is different than a movie where you're presented with the images all the time. So to me, I was inspired by a good author who could write concepts and give me, it just kind of absorbed into me and I could create the envisions. And at one point in Papillon, he's talking, he was a prisoner, a very long history.
Yes.
It's an autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sitting there looking at nature and he was looking at the life of an ant colony. And the description of that, I saw it for like 5 minutes as I was reading the book, and you could just see it because it was so well written. And this was even the translated version.
Mm.
So it's those type of authors that just inspired me. There's too many to mention. There's many, many good ones.
Okay.
Many good ones.
We are coming down to our last 2 minutes. I wanted to let our listeners here at Off the Shelf know Danny the Dragon is on CD. You can go to Tina's website or Amazon.com to get a copy of the book. She also is the author of the book Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebook. And please go out and see Danny the Dragon on October the 30th at 8 o'clock at Pasadena City College. Last question, Tina. A CD, two books, mom, researcher, interior decorator, so many wonderful things that you're doing, and the proceeds from the CD going to benefit people who have the disease that you were talking about at your website. I know the gluten intolerance. What last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our awesome listeners here at Off the Shelf?
I would say two things. First of all, for the women that are out there, to realize if you're a stay-at-home mom or if you're a teacher, if you're a baby boomer, if you're just a woman, to really realize that we have a real vital role in society, and we can do a lot. Women have a different role in life, and we're not recognized in many ways, and it's like pursue those dreams, pursue your dreams, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whether it's helping the children do achieving their goals, but realize that you're important too, and go for your goals and get help. Get help to achieve those goals that you want to go for. And they can be achieved. There's not anything that can't be achieved if you know how to go about it. And if you come to an obstacle and you don't know what the next step is, just don't give up.
Okay.
Just go and do a little bit more work and find out what that obstacle is. But don't give up. It might take a little while. Some goals can be done in a week. Some take lifetimes. But, you know, go for it.
Thank you so much to Tina Turbin, the author of Danny the Dragon, which is a children's picture book series. And she's also the author of Showbiz Kids East Coast Guidebook, which listening to her talk about it on the show sounds like a book that anybody who would want to, their children or themselves, get involved in the entertainment business on the East Coast. She deals with the unions in different ways, resumes that you can write for different types of entertainment. I would encourage you to also get that book. Her books are available at Amazon.com. You can also check her out at her website, www.tinaturbin.com. She has a wealth of information there. I want to thank you for sharing your talent, your gifts, and your work here with us at Off the Shelf, and to please continue to do the wonderful work that you do to empower and bring so much joy to children and other people's lives, Tina. To our listeners, thank you so much for listening to Off the Shelf. Please tell your family, your friends, colleagues, and book lovers everywhere to tune in to us here at Blog Talk Radio. In the coming days, we'll continue to bring you feature interviews with established and best-selling, and as well as up-and-coming writers, producers, editors, agents, and other movers and shakers in the book business, as we were delighted to have with you today Tina Turbin to introduce you to her. To those who don't know her, to those who do, to reintroduce you to her. And please visit me online at www.chistell.com, and pick up a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which is available at the website, and it's also available at bookstores. Thank you again for tuning in to Off the Shelf, and tremendous thank you again to Tina Turbin for being our special guest here today. Remember to our listeners that you are valued, loved, and truly blessed. Keep writing and reading great books. Thank you.